We were at a Google whack before there was such a thing as a Google whack.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You're listening to episode 100 of Sapnin Podcast with myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend slash rapper friend, Morgan Richards, a.k.a. Mo Dick.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards. I'm the mountain, he's the sea, and this conversation is full of questions and answers for boom, blast, and ruin celebrations.
This was a good celebration, and that's why I forgot about the puns, because I was so excited that the fact that this is episode 100 of Sapnin Podcast. Well, how did we get you?
I have no idea. Three digits.
Well, let me tell you, Morgan. What we did is we did a series of chats, right? Normally, individually, we were bands. Some at festivals, we did many, many bands. And then we've accumulated them all and put them in order. That's exactly what we've done. And somehow, we got to 100.
Now, to come to think of it, you've said that, and that makes a lot of sense. So
it does ring a bell.
Yeah.
I know, yes. Unbelievable. Thank you very much if you've listened to... If this is your first time listening, hello, welcome. My name is Sean Smith. I'm in a band called Raiders, and I used to be in a band called The Blackout. This is my friend Morgan Richards. Morgan, explain yourself.
Sapnin, I'm Morgan. Sometimes go by Mo Dick because of rap jokes, apparently. I'm a journalist, and I've talked to bands for years on radio, in magazines, wrestlers and newspapers.
Talked to bands in wrestlers? Anyway, before we put any new listeners off by... keep talking and I'm muddling our words up. Thank you very much if you're checking us out. But if you've listened to any of the past episodes, thank you. It means the absolute world to us. You are our superheroes and yes, it means the absolute world to us. I can't believe you got this far.
Yeah, it's been such a wild ride. Literally 100 weeks in a row, without fail, we have put out a brand new episode of Sapnin Podcast each and every week. It's absolutely phenomenal to see how much we've got this far. All the support we've received from listeners, bands, PRs, management, booking agents, the whole lot. But today, Sean, is a very special celebration because we've got one hell of a guest to mark this occasion.
Yes, we do. This week's guest is Biffy Clyro, frontman, guitarist, all-round beautiful, beautiful human. Not all, just on the eye. All right. Not just on the eyes, but in the soul too. This week's guest is the fantastic Simon Neil.
Yes, Mon the fucking Biff. The beautiful mind, body and soul of Simon Neil is with us for this three-digit era of the podcast. Now, this is huge. Biffy Clyro are a band I've loved for years. They're absolutely massive. They're scheduled to be the Download Festival 2021 headliners, but our guests on episode 100.
Yes, I'm super sorry to Simon for, if he's listening to this now, he's just gone, yeah, we're headlining Download, and then gone, oh, but I'm on this load of shit. what a poor bugger. But yeah, what a fucking absolutely fantastic chap. Brilliant chat. We talked about a new album, when they played Merthyr in 2003, because everybody who listens to this cares about what happens in Merthyr Tydfil, South Wales, where I live.
Well, let me tell you this. If you're a fan of any era of Biffy Clyro, from their early stuff to the latest, there's something in here for you. You're going to learn so many new secrets about Simon, his life, and the band. And I don't want to go too much into it because it's such a lovely conversation. But within this next hour, you're about to hear stories of his genius songwriting and the band's different chapters, their journey from those toilet venues like Merthyr Tydfil to headlining some of the world's biggest festivals, topless adventures, weed, family, heartfelt moments, and of course their new record, A Celebration of Endings, that debuted at number one in the official UK album charts. Obviously it did, because they're fucking massive.
Yes, they're brilliant. Fantastic. Thank you again to Simon. Thank you very much to Simon's people letting us do it. Thank you very much to Marcy Jacobson for helping us sort it out.
And this was such a big deal for us that Sean and I actually dressed up to talk to Simon on camera. There's no point in that because he can't see us from the waist down, but I put special jeans on, shoes, the lot.
Yeah, I put trousers on, which was the first time I'd done that for quite some time.
Yeah, because you normally do these without any bottoms whatsoever, right?
European naked, I call that.
Okay. Well, hoodie on, nothing else. I don't get...
Yep. Yeah. What you can see right now is all I'm wearing. Moving on, because it's a podcast, and luckily those people can't see my bottom half.
Right, but as we're saying thank you again, just a massive shout out to everyone who's helped us get this far. It's been a wild ride. If this is your first time listening to Sapnin Podcast, then please go and give us a follow on the Twitter and Instagram at Sapnin Pod. Sean, how'd you spell it?
At, that's the A with a curly circle around it, SAPPENINPOD, that's at the A with a curly circle around it, SAPPENINPOD, SAPPENINPOD.
Thank you. We've got hours worth of interviews and chats with all of your favourite bands, personalities, celebrities, sports people, like the whole lot. But we need to say a massive thank you to everyone in our Patreon, because without them, we probably wouldn't have got this far. So if
No. It's not probably. I don't think we would have got this far. I definitely wouldn't have got this far. So if it wasn't for the people involved in the Patreon, we wouldn't have got this far. So thank you so, so much to every single one of you, from just joining to coming to joining the group to the highest tiers. Thank you very much to every single one of you. I can't stress this enough. It means the absolute world to me and Morgan, and we definitely, definitely wouldn't be able to do this without you. So don't let Morgan downplay it.
I wasn't downplaying it. I was building up to say that they are some of our favourite people in the world. So if you've enjoyed any little bit of this podcast, please think about joining our wonderful family, community and group at patreon.com/sapnin. Now, if you listen to this on the Friday, we're actually going to be doing a special Q&A live session on our Patreon page with everyone involved tomorrow at midday. So there's still time to sign up and get involved. If you listen to it afterwards, that's going to be up as a bonus bit of content on the wall anyway. So there's so many more celebrations to go on there, and we've got some very, very exciting things for the next few weeks of episodes of Sapnin Podcast that we can't wait to share with you all. But that's patreon.com/sapnin. But anyway, Sean, yes. Episode 100, we finally got here. Let's dive in to our wonderful and heartfelt conversation with one of the most beautiful men to ever grace the earth, Mr. Wow. Simon fucking Neil.
Wow, I've never seen you so aggressive and sexually aggressive towards a guest as well.
He's beautiful.
I know. You don't have to tell me. I was there watching him with you. Anyway, thanks again, Simon. We love you. Let's do one of these in the flesh. Fucking Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sapnin!
Yes!
Yeah,
part of this now, boys. I'm part of it.
Yes, our guest this week is singer, frontman, good-looking motherfucker.
Yeah, true.
And he has been lucky enough to play Merthyr Tydfil in 2003. Ladies and gentlemen, this week's guest is Scotland's finest, Mr. Simon Neil. Yes!
Thanks for having me, boys. How are we doing?
Good, yeah. Good, man.
100% better for seeing you. Yeah, thanks for taking the time.
Okay, well, me too. I tell you what, Merthyr Tydfil has been good to us over the years. I'm sure we played with Exit International in Merthyr Tydfil back in the day as well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in 2003, you played in RM's nightclub. And you had Maidasuno supported you. And Scott from Maidasuno went on to become...
Went on to Exit International. How do you... You've got good memory, Sean. I tell you what, there was a few tasty-looking fellas outside that show. I do remember loading the gear out afterwards and thinking, maybe don't make eye contact just with this particular group of lads, you know?
Yep, welcome to my upbringing, because that's exactly where I live. That's where I come from. That's where the blackout started as well. So RM's was the first gig we ever played. So,
You know what? We're from a small town in Scotland, or a couple of small towns in Scotland. And I tell you what, you figure out pretty early whether you want to be in a band and actually go through it, because I'm sure that you guys, people look at you and go, what are you into? What's your deal? You know, and like, you have to be... You know, you feel like a gang, you feel like you're against, not against folk, but it's like your little secret, and you're like, fuck everyone else, this is our thing.
Yeah, that's exactly the feeling. I was watching an interview with somebody yesterday, and they were saying, like, well, why do you want to be in a band? And mine was always to get out of Merthyr, but also put Merthyr on the map for something that wasn't violence or, like, teenage pregnancy or drug use, or even... Merthyr is really well known for having Britain's highest percentage of white socks sold.
Honestly?
What does that mean?
Oh, wonderful fact.
Yeah, terrible. Why would you, like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I don't know what that means. Like, I don't know how to, like, deduce that down to, like a fact, you know?
The most percentage of white socks sold is in Merthyr Tydfil for some reason, and I don't know how you can... What could they be using it for? Like, what crimes could you do with a white sock?
Is it particularly fit? Sorry, Morgan.
I was just going to say, this is one of the weirdest starts to a podcast we've ever had. Loving every second of it, though.
Go on, Morg. You get into it. You be the journalist.
To get this thing started, how are you doing? How's things with you at the moment in these crazy times? I know you've been keeping busy with a lot of stuff behind the scenes, but just how's things?
Yeah, I think, like most people, I'm a little bit unsettled. I'm kind of, like, into the swing of things now, but it's weird, like, to put out a record and not have the logical next step of playing shows. That kind of hit me in a bigger way than I thought it would, because I'd mentally prepared. You know, I was like, I knew the record would come and we wouldn't be going on the road for a while, but see, just emotionally and mentally, that sense of completion... So I've struggled a little bit with that, but I cannot complain. The sun is shining in Scotland today, which never fucking happens. Mm. So you know what? If God's smiling, I'm smiling. Something like
nice.
That.
Yes, that's the attitude we need, I think, because we have had some people on who've been quite miserable, and it's kind of, taken away from the creativity during this time as well. But
yeah, I mean, have you noticed, have you guys felt that at all? I mean, is your motivation maintained? Because that's the one thing I was expecting to do, like dozens of projects. You know, I thought, wow, 4 months off, man, what would we achieve? You know, and then I spent the first 3 weeks like everyone else just watching Netflix. And now I've started picking up my guitar a little bit now, but okay, I still don't have that kind of spark. How do you guys feel? Are you feeling kind of motivated?
Yeah, I mean, I think like having this podcast has been a benefit really, because it's kind of been the perfect distraction, because yeah, we've just been so busy with it that I haven't really stopped to think about some other thing, like some of the other things. So, I mean, it's a blessing in disguise, really, for me at least.
What about, I presume you boys are doing this a slightly different way than you would have done it before.
Yeah.
Would you not? Yeah, so does it take a month or so just to kind of get into the swing of it, and now you can't remember the other way?
Funnily enough, we were kind of talking beforehand about that. Yeah, because we just kind of got into the swing of doing them in person, because we've been going to gigs, just doing them backstage and hanging out or whatever. And yeah, we'd kind of nailed that. And then all of a sudden, of course, because we nailed that, the Blackout had a saying, if it can go wrong, it will go wrong. We all had like posters made with the Blackout logo with all this written on. And so of course, we've just got into the swing of it. So all of a sudden, there's a killer virus that nobody's ever heard of. Of course there is.
I know, and then you have to reskill yourself. It's like, that's the one thing that's cool that we're all, as a species, we're quite adaptable. Because if you think about how we're all living and creating and doing our things now, if you'd said that 6 months ago, we would have had no fucking idea. So it is quite encouraging that we can shift and adapt to different situations. But good on you, Jen. Good on you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, but we are trying.
But talking about adapting to new situations, I believe that in lockdown, you've actually got yourselves a puppy.
Yes. You know, yes, absolutely. Is my wife posting on Instagram or something? me and my missus, we've wanted a dog for years, but with the traveling we do as a band, it would just be cruel and it's not really been possible. So the first thing we did when we found out we'd be home for a while, it was like, we're finally doing it. So yeah, we got a wee French bulldog and she's a light in my life. It's actually really helped with those days where you wake up and you feel a bit kind of, oh, what's this week going to bring? It takes me out of myself. You know, I don't know if you guys have pets or whatever, or kids or anything, you know, but I imagine it's similar if you maybe have kids. It just reminds you that you're not perhaps the most important thing in the fucking world all the time.
I think that's the reason I don't have a pet and a kid, is because I want to, I long for that. Like, no, it's me, no.
It's not time to relinquish that crown yet, Sean. It's absolutely not time to relinquish it.
No, I can't give it up. But during lockdown, I saw that you were doing, you've been doing like little sets and sitting in your house and playing guitar and wearing some incredible outfits, unbelievable selection of outfits. Is that something that you look into possibly do again, or is it just something that you did then?
I think initially it was just a case of kind of, because everything stopped so quickly, and I think it was to maintain a semblance of control over some aspect of my life. So I kind of committed to doing it. I ended up doing it like 8 or 9 weeks. Realistically, I ran out of songs. I managed to kind of adapt like 45 songs to acoustic ones just myself, because it's hard without the boys as well. And it was a wonderful thing to do. I'm not against revisiting it, but I feel like it was more a wee survival thing. I'm so keen to do something loud, to be honest. You know, I feel like I've been sat in this room doing acoustic for a while, and our last kind of proper tour was an unplugged tour anyway, a couple of years ago. So to be honest, you're more likely to see me filming myself standing in my room just screaming with a fucking Marshall cab.
Absolutely
deletion. But we'll figure it out. You know, I think if now that we've got this new information from the government, if we can actually string two sentences together, then, you know, I feel like if the next few months are a write-off in terms of what we've been told, then I would definitely, you know, do something else like that. But it was just trying to be a bit of fun. It was also to keep a sense of connection with people. I think, like everyone else, that it was such a shock to the system immediately to go from seeing friends, family and everything to then not seeing a soul. And I think just that sense of connection, even through the screen with the fans and things, really, it kind of brought me a bit of happiness and joy, and kind of gave me a focus, something to hang my week around, you know, because you know what it's like. It's such a strange life that we live anyway when you're making music. You know, you live in these bubbles and you're kind of, we're joking earlier, but you do, at points you think the world only exists in our bubble when we're in tour and doing this, and it's quite nice to have that bubble popped and just reminded, like, music's meant to be it's a tool. It's not, you know, sometimes you get into the touring and making records, and actually the one thing about this lockdown, it's reminded me that music is all about how it makes you feel, how it makes other people feel, how you can connect through your favourite records, or if I can write a song that connects with someone. That's what keeps us doing it. It's nice to have a little bit of adoration now and again, but that's not your motivating factor. And if it is, then this lockdown's gonna fucking kill those bands dead or those acts dead.
Yeah, I saw a snippet of the Celebration of Endings live stream that you did in Barrowlands. Unbelievable it looks. I saw you've just put up fireworks.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, on your YouTube, and it looks amazing. How did that come about, and who came up with the genius idea of like walking from thing to thing? Because that was the eyebrows up. You can't see this because it's on a podcast, but somebody's eyebrows just
my,
got up.
My face is smug. If you're looking at my face, it's smug. So, we knew immediately the album was being put back. We knew that shows weren't in the agenda. It was nice to have a little bit of time to actually consider what we could do creatively. Now, the main liberating thing for me about the performance aspect was we don't have to all face the same direction. It's so basic, but you're so used to setting up facing a crowd or facing one way, or the cameras if it's video shoot or whatever. So as soon as I kind of broke that rule in my mind, all these ideas came in. And fortunately, this album kind of was suitable and adaptable to play top to bottom, and it felt like each song had a different kind of character and personality. Because some albums, it's like the full album is the emotion. So maybe if you played those 12 songs in a row, it maybe wouldn't feel quite so 3D. So with this one, I really wanted four different setups. One was the main stage, which we did. One is like a floor setup with piano and an orchestra around us. Another room was like an amp room. So like we basically built a room that was like a Sun, you know, the band Sun, like yeah. Their stage setup. So we just played surrounded with these amps, which was amazing. And then the video that's kind of went up on YouTube is from Tiny Indoor Fireworks, which is like a mirrored cube. And it's one of those projects that you expect to hit a few stumbling blocks, which we did. But actually every idea we managed to work out, even the part about me going at the end of the show, I take my guitar and I play outside. I walk outside to the street. And initially I was like, how the fuck am I going to get a guitar lead or the wireless to read? So we ended up having to use like three like extenders for the frequencies. But because everyone was so committed to the project, everything got ironed out. So I was able to actually do that. So when you see that in the video, I'm playing my guitar on the street in the middle of the day, and I'm like, it's one of those, it was quite an emotional moment actually to be in a venue that we've got such a connection with, and to kind of walk out and remind myself that no one's there, and that like it's exciting to do a project like that, but it does remind you what we're missing. But the main thing was trying to get across the kind of intensity and intimacy of a Biffy show by excluding the most important part, which is the fans. And I think we managed to kind of tweak it and cater it in a different way. So I think it was a success in my eyes, and I can't wait for people to see it. And we're going to do something with it in the next couple of months, hopefully get it either in Netflix will pay us 100 million quid. You know,
yes.
Once they sort Beyonce's new deal, you know, they'll sort us out, I'm sure.
Yeah. You get a, yeah, I get a, like a Joe Rogan Spotify deal now with $100 million for it.
Oh, I'd be all right, wouldn't
it? But yeah, it looks incredible. It looked absolutely incredible.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah, so many people like are trying to do live stream gigs in this thing, and I think I don't want to be mean, but some of them just fall short. But that was, it was so impressive. It's absolutely ridiculous. So congratulations.
It's hard, you know, because we've all learned, you train yourselves to play a certain way over the years. And like you're used to engaging with people in a certain way. And I think the reason that we were, you know, some people maybe haven't been quite so successful with their interpretation is it's a different thing you're doing. You know, like it's not, you can't just translate the live show. Even if I watch a DVD of like my favorite band playing to like 50,000 people, after three or four songs, I'm like, I'm skipping. You know, I'm like, all right, that's cool, but this is my favorite tune, or this bit's got a bit of cool production. And actually, so even at the best example of that, it gets slow and boring. So I think that's, we just need to be more creative. But I think people are learning as well, and everyone's realizing there are different ways to do things. But I think the main survival feeling has been just to play together. Bands want to play together. You want to feel that you're a part of something and that you have purpose. And without those streams, a lot of bands will be sitting at home just going, do I even exist? Why am I getting up in the morning, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, like all four members of my band at the moment are locked down in four separate places in Wales that are not allowed to visit each other.
So is that for the foreseeable? Have you been together since lockdown kind of thing?
Yeah, it eased for a little bit, for a couple of weeks. We recorded a cover and then we're back in lockdown now. And yeah, I just want to get in a room and yell.
I know, because it's the exhilaration of volume and things. It's the basics. It's not even, it's like the volume overtakes your body. It's a physical thing as much as like an emotional thing. And you're right. Well, it won't be long, I hope, Sean. Hopefully we'll be back together soon, you know, fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed.
Are you boys missing each other, though, Sean and Morgan?
We have literally only met once between March and now. We've met once.
Oh, you're joking.
Yeah. And we did it. We went to go meet somebody to do a podcast and they didn't turn up.
Who was that? I'll fucking do it.
Yes, go on, Simon.
I better not.
But anyway, I mean, look, there's a whole host of things I really want to get into about from your career, Biffy, and everything. But am I right in saying that 2020 is actually technically the 25th anniversary of Biffy as a band?
Yeah, sadly, you make me sound 100 years old, but we started this band when we were like 14, 15. And I guess we did our very first demo, fucking hell.
Demo.
You know, cut a disc?
Yeah, exactly. It was on cassette. Like, you know, we had to do it that way. I'm really showing my age now. Before CDRs and shit. And like each cassette we got it printed on cost like 15 quid. You know, back when studios used to rip the piss. Like, well, we've done your session, but if you want to hear it, it costs you £30 for a CDR. You're like, fuck off. But yeah, 25 years ago was when we first kind of played music together, Morgan, and just like everyone else, like high school band, and we just didn't stop. We were called Screwfish at that point, though, to be fair, which is an equally horrific band. I don't know why I've managed to miss the target so often with band names, because I'm pretty good with song titles and shit, but when it comes to band names, I'm like, no, I can't commit.
Well, I've realised I've got written down by you that I was meant to add to your intro, and the best use of abracadabra as a lyric. That's what I was going to have as well.
Thank you so much. There's not that many occasions that abracadabra has been used, I guess.
But it's certainly the best. It's certainly the best.
But speaking of bad names, like, I know you've been asked this so many times, and I think, as a journalist, I think it's the worst question you can ever ask anyone.
Don't ask it then! Don't ask it!
I'm not, Sean. Oh, what I was going to say is...
Oh, he's gone.
The worst question you can ask is the meaning behind a band name. But what I wanted to bring up is that you and the boys have made up so many stories in the past about the origin of it. But I just wanted to know, what is your favourite story you've made up? I mean, is there something that you've just done on the spot and someone's believed it word for word?
You've turned our wrong, Morg. Nice.
The best one was turning it into an acronym, which took quite a long time. But when I finally kind of had the big imagination for feeling young, because life yearned real optimism, that was like, there's something about that like actually the spirit and the kind of sentiment of that acronym actually suits what we do quite well. So that's probably my favorite one that I keep coming back to, and I'm like, wow, we're really smart, you know. but in case any of your listeners don't know, we've said like Biffy was the name of this British spy that James Bond was based off, which is actually true. And then myself, Ben and James used to go on holiday in Clyro in Wales, so we met there, and then for some reason we had this combination. Then there was like a Finnish footballer from the late 18th century, even though football wasn't invented then.
that's brilliant.
A wonderful silky player. He had a cultured left foot and his name was Biffy Clyro. So there's more where that's come from. A Cliff Richard pen, Cliff Richard merchandise was a Biffy Clyro.
Unbelievable.
Amazing.
I've got too much time in my hands, obviously.
Yeah, that's what you could do over the next lockdown. Now he's just come up with so many more.
That's not a bad idea.
One of the things with Biffy Clyro that I've always loved over the years is just seeing how much of an evolution the band has taken in your time. I think it's safe to say that you're one of the last bands that kind of have that crossover effect with people in so many different subgenres. If it's like rock, indie, metal, you always have an audience with so many different subgenres. How has it been for you to see how far, not only what the band has become in that time, but just evolving it into the phenomenon it is today?
I think it was very kind of you to say that. It's weird because see, when you start, you don't envisage like 10 years ahead, 15, 20 years ahead. So every step, it's just about being trying to be honest with who I am at that stage in my life. You know, like realistically, I don't love exactly the same music as I did when I was 19. I still have my favorite records from that era still matter to me so much, and that foundation, like that time period, I think from when you're in your early teens to your early 20s, that's when you take on all your inspiration and influences. I truly believe that, and for me it was, you know, it was rock, it was like Nirvana led me all the way down through Fugazi and things like that into the American underground. So that was kind of my education, and I think everything we do as a band is kind of built upon that aspect. But to be honest, it's just the things I like over the years. You know, like I still love big, bombastic, bright, shiny pop music as much as I love like really dirge-like kind of avant-garde experimental music. You know, like I've been listening to Roxette a lot in this lockdown. For some reason, it reminds me of my youth, and like it gives me a good feeling. And then I'm also listening to one of my favorite records in the last few years is by a band called Imperial Triumphant, and they've made a record called Vile Luxury, which not their most recent one. So it's like everything kind of gets flung into a pot, and like what comes out. The best thing and the lucky part where we are is that we've been friends from when we were 7 years old. So I've never felt foolish coming in with songs to the boys and they're going, oh, wait, listen, we're this type of band or we're this. Because we're evolving together, we're growing together. And I think being fearless or trying to be fearless is kind of what it's all about, and not getting hung up on genre. You know, we'd always be a three-piece rock band, but I don't care if we're making, you know, fucking, if we're doing blast beats in a song, that's fine. If we're doing like pop rock over here, I think that's fine as well. As long as it comes from us and is a, you know, a sincere reflection of what you're trying to say. And I think maybe that's why our band does kind of balance these different styles, because it is sincere, and it's never in a pastiche way. It's never in anything other than full respect for what we're doing, and I'm a true believer that the song, like half of a song almost tells you where it should end up. You know, I'm sure you kind of feel that time, Sean, as well. You know, sometimes a song will tell you where it needs to be, other times you have to find it, you know, find where does this belong. I know there's some magic here, so patience is key. But if I look at the evolution, you know, we've obviously got some early fans of the band who like think we're shite now, which is fine. You know, I can appreciate that. If that's how, but we need to change. I don't want to make the same record that was making, you know, our first album was 2002, 18 years ago. Like that to me would be pretending and acting. And those records, we made the best version of those records in the moment. Yeah, we might be able to do it slightly. We couldn't do it better because you have to be in that headspace. And that's why I still love the thought. Even now, I'm looking forward to the next record, just trying to kind of find where we're going to explore and find that first song or that first riff that's going to like guide me, you know, like the North Star. But it is bonkers. I think on this album, we've talked a lot about that we've been a band for 20 odd years, and it's really, it surprised me. It's taken me by surprise because I genuinely don't feel that. You know, I feel that we're still in our first 4 or 5 years as a band. I feel as though we're still learning every time we make a record, you know, and I kind of forget. I think because, you know, I enjoy smoking weed and stuff, and I think that kind of helps keep me in more of a, you know, and more of a kind of forward momentum, and I don't really dwell on things in the past, so I'm always moving forward. But I'm very proud of it. I'm glad we have evolved. I've always wanted to be in a band that, at least if we were going to do this for a long time, we didn't want to do the same thing. And even in our first records, I remember saying, if we want to do a reggae record, we will, you know, God forbid. But I do remember thinking that, you know, like, fuck it, if we want to do an acoustic album, we will. Our very first single, 27, had like a pop rock song, like a 6-minute post-metal song and an acoustic song on it. And I think these little parts have always been there, and sometimes we just grab from different trees and then, you know, and we feed ourselves.
Yeah. Nice. You just mentioned your weed and doing a reg. Surely it goes hand in hand doing a biffy reggae record. That'd be fantastic.
I've obviously not found the right strain. Yeah, because I tell you what, I always say that to people. Like, see, if I didn't smoke weed, I'd be fucking dangerous right now.
Like, we're
quite productive and everything, but then I'm like, man, I see if I didn't enjoy my weed, I'd probably have a record done a week. You know, of course not, but likes to consider that.
Yeah. Nice. You mentioned Imperial. Was it Imperial Triumphant? Yeah, I read an interview that you did with them earlier, and I checked them out, and they are bonkers.
Bonkers, isn't it? There's a song in that record called Chernobyl Blues, and it starts with like this. It's like a 3-minute like weird jazzy kind of almost like Roy Orbison type chords. And then it just starts, and there's this 4 minutes of what seems like noise. But once you listen to it a few times, the way the drums like revolve, evolve, swing back in themselves, break up, stop, it's truly, truly inspiring. And the reason I love records like that is because the first time you hear them, you're like, what the fuck is this?
That's exactly what I did. Yeah.
Where do you hold on to? You know, where are you meant to grab a hold of this? And what, I love that so much, because a band like that goes in and practices these fucking songs. Like, they figure it out and they go and do it. And as much as it's chaos and can be madness to someone else, it's very focused and deliberate. And I love that about music. And that's almost why I fell in love with heavy music as a youngster, because see, my brother and everything would be like, that's just fucking noise, switch that shit off. And I liked that because I was like, no, it's not noise. There's fucking nuance to this. There's detail. Mm. But you're not smart enough to understand. You know? Being a typical wee brother, you know, just being a wee dick. But I love that. I love when things can kind of perhaps alienate some people, but actually if you dig deep, there's something beautiful underneath it, you know? Thanks for checking out, Sean. I hope you revisit. I hope I hasn't like terrified you. Like, I'm not sure if you're into that kind of avant-garde.
I'm up for a bit of everything. What are you going to say?
I was going to say it's not for the faint of hearted, let's say.
No, it's not. Maybe listen to it when it's daylight.
not to scare yourself. Yeah, make sure the curtains are open. I didn't think like trumpets and brass would really work on death and black metal, but
that's again what keeps me looking forward and wanting to move forward as a band, because it's each time I discover a new, it's like, who would think of doing that? I mean, the album starts with brass. Their new album, actually, Alphaville, has like a barbershop quartet on it, and I just love the disrespect to the rules. That's what each new generation of musicians and everyone shows the last generation, that, you know, that these rules that have slowly built around what you do, well, they don't fucking matter, they don't exist. And that's why the next generation is always kind of right in what they do, whether you dig, you know, I mean, I'm not big on necessarily the chart music, if that's even a phrase anymore. But I love the fact that it's just ripping up the rule book, you know.
Yeah.
You listen to like a...
That's exactly how I feel about kind of like the SoundCloud rappers. Like, I'm not into a lot of the music, but is there anything more punk than some of the stuff they're doing?
Exactly. They don't give a fuck. Even there was a, like, I think Travis Scott's last big single had seemed to have 3 songs in it. You know, it was almost like a prog rap song. Like, 1 minute doing one beat and then changed tempo, changed like vibe, and then switched back. And I love that. And as you say, it's that fearlessness. See when you're that kind of age as well, you're an iconoclast without even realizing it. You're just like, everything that came before, shit, wait till you hear what I'm doing. And I'm sure you felt the same. I felt like that when I was a teenager. I'm like, fuck all this nonsense, wait till you hear what we're going to bring to the table.
Yeah, mine was like, Oh, have you heard Limp Bizkit? Check out this shit in Welsh version.
Well, you're doing yourself a disservice there, but that's
No.
You guys toured with Limp Bizkit, didn't you? Because we played a show with Limp Bizkit back in the day as well.
Yeah. How was it for you?
Well, it was a tough one, actually. We did Finsbury Park with them and then the Manchester Apollo.
Small shows, then. Nice couple shows.
Finsbury Park was fun because we played like in the middle of the day. We were playing with like This Girl. I don't know if you remember the band This Girl.
I don't remember. I used to love This Girl, Liam and Ryan, and loved them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Ryan and Liam and everything.
Yeah.
So they get covered in piss. Like they literally got piss bottles, the classic. In fact, Liam caught a piss bottle, didn't know it was piss, took a sip, and then he was just retching for the next 4 minutes. But we went down okay. But then we were headlining a festival across London that night. And when I say, it was like we were playing in the back of a fucking burger van. And it was basically us playing and we could see the fireworks and hear the Finsbury Park like festival. Limp Bizkit were fucking still playing. And we were like 2 miles away seeing this massive show that we'd just been a part of. And we were playing some festival to 21 people. So it was... If you can live through that and still enjoy playing music, then you're doing all right. But yeah, how was your shows? How were your shows, Sean? Did you love it?
I was amazing just because literally they were the band that got me into rock. When I heard Fred swear 48 times on Hot Dog, I was like, oh, well, I love swearing and I love shouting. Those two things, right. There's two things I could probably do. And then I ultimately, the first song, The Blackout, we had a terrible name called 10 Minute Preview before The Blackout. The first song we ever covered was Counterfeit by Limp Bizkit. And then...
Oh, wow. I love that $3 bill, yo. That was such a good record, man.
Yeah, real good. Well, I say that, but then if you listen to it now, the first six are good. And then it goes a bit meh. And then they do Faith. And then we're back on it.
That's a good way to live by, man. Why don't more people do that?
Do six good songs, do four up there, and then check out George Michael cover on the end.
Cover at the end, yeah.
but speaking of like that contrast between shows and moving forward and everything, I think you guys had such an organic rise throughout the years from playing those toilet shows, venues, towns like Merthyr Tydfil to now headlining the likes of Download Festival, Reading and Leeds, just all these over the years. I mean, not only must the journey itself, when you look back on it, must just be some of your favourite parts and seeing everything unfold, but now being able to just have a resume of going from playing with the likes of the Bronx on the Kerrang tour to supporting Foo Fighters and Iggy Pop to now being up there with bands like Kiss and Aerosmith who were headlining the other night with you.
I know it's a strange one, Morgan. It's because I'm still such a music fan, I struggle to see us in that context, to be quite honest. You know, like I still see whenever we're on a festival bill or something, I see us as the outlier and I'm like, oh Christ, you know, I hope no one notices. Again, that's why I don't get tired of doing this, because every time we step on a stage like that, I'm like, I can't fucking believe it. You know, I think about so many amazing bands that we played with growing up in my teenage years and when we started touring around the UK. And you realise how luck is important, because there's an awful lot of extremely talented, incredible bands that didn't perhaps get that next opportunity to kind of make another record or make a bigger budget record or something like that, or even have the chance for people to hear you. Because when we started, you know, the internet wasn't as omnipresent as it is now. And literally the only way we could get people to hear our band was to travel and just tour. It blows me away when I think back to that. You know, those years, because it never crossed our minds that we would be like a festival headliner. It honestly didn't. You know, as the years went on and we start to become a bit more popular, it became, all right, we could do this, you know, and we kind of grew into the stature of it, I guess. But it really wasn't on the cards. You know, I mean, if you ask anyone that kind of was at the early Biffy shows or whatever, that wasn't really the vibe or the intention. And I think I quite like the fact it's almost a happy accident that we've ended up where we are, you know. But it freaks me out. It freaks me out talking about it. See, when I get on stage, I'm quite at home, you know. I get so nervous before a show, but once I get on there, I really, at this stage, I kind of feel like I belong and that I'm myself up there, you know, which isn't always easy. You know, I think I'm naturally quite a shy person. Or, you know, are really shy or really over the top. And I think I can kind of inhabit that part of my mind. So But it's more when I come home and I see either see something in the telly or like I'll hear it in context, like you've just mentioned Kiss in the same sense, you know, and that's when I go, oh Christ, that's crazy. But having said that, I don't want to sound arrogant, but I believe in our band. I think we're a fucking unreal band, you know, like I don't think it's an accident that we're here. We worked our asses off. We've always tried to get better. I really always want to write incredible songs, and I'm not willing to settle. When we make a record or we play a show, I don't want to settle for fuck all. I want to come off after a show and feel like I could not have given anything more than what I did there. So sometimes that can, you know, and Sean will know this with touring and stuff, sometimes it can leave you emotionally unbalanced, because it's really unnatural when you're standing in front of big crowds. When you come off and maybe go back to your normal kind of brain, it's really, it can fuck with your ego. It can fuck with what normal is and what joy is and what music is. And that's where the kind of work comes in, and where our friends and families help us out, because you need to get that balance of, hey, I can go on stage and sing to 50,000 people and it's natural as fuck, but then come home and not be an absolute arsehole, or as everyone calls it, the frontman cunt flu. which we've all had at points. We've all had at points. But yeah, I fucking love it. And you know what? The main thing is that I don't treat a big show to thousands and thousands of people any different to if we're playing to 500 people. We never have. Yeah. You know, and I think that's also important. So it doesn't equate as an amazing show just because there's fucking 50,000 people there. An amazing show can be to 500 people or 1,500 people or whatever, you know. That's a beauty of it.
Do you remember a moment when... Well, I guess when you started out, or a couple of albums in, when somebody in a ridiculous band like give you props or whatever, and it blew your mind, like, because we're always fascinated in moments where, because some people would have thought, you know, like some people literally told me the Blackout was the best band of all time, and I know they're wrong. We all know they're wrong, right? Faith No More exists, right? Faith No More exists, right? You can't tell me anyway, but you know, and that would blow my mind. So, and you know. But to some people, like, I was on that pedestal or whatever. But then when I met, like, Duff from Guns N' Roses or whatever, I was just like, whoa! Is there a moment when someone like that came onto you that you remember that you were like, I can't get over this is happening?
Yeah, there's probably been a couple of different kind of stages. I remember when 100 Reasons took us out on tour and, like, our second album. And that was the first moment where I thought, God, someone that I respect and admire and a band I really love, we're kind of on their radar. So on a small level, that was like, oh my God, we're, you know, a proper band digs us. The time that blew my mind was probably Josh Homme from Queens of the Stone Age. You know,
nice.
I saw Queens in 1997 or 98 in Glasgow on the Rated R tour. It was amazing. They did this frequency thing at the start, actually, and it created the Brown sound. But no one created Brown. But the whole audience went, oh, like, as one. It was one of the most exceptional things. It was like totally involuntary. The whole audience. Oh. But so to see him and to know, I've known him since Caius, as the first time I picked up Kerrang or whatever. Caius were there. You know, I didn't even realize he was probably only about 18 at that point. But for him to kind of, to read him commenting on our band, you know, and saying that we'll make you think about music differently. That was just one of the most satisfying and exhilarating moments of my life. And then we were lucky to have him play in a song and like the album after that or something. But that meant a real lot to me. And you're right, Sean, it's weird because it kind of takes someone that you've known your entire life or someone you've admired to say something like that before it whips you out. Because as you say, it's beautiful when people say, oh, you're my favorite band and that. But when it's someone who's been your favorite band or helped become, you become who you are, it's such a head fuck. And I feel like I got to play with Slash. We did one of the worst versions of Crazy Train by Ozzy Osbourne, but I got to play... I got to play like Crazy Train with Slash at the MTV Awards a few years ago with Ozzy watching, and like...
Yeah.
See, when we sound checked that, like we sound checked it the day before, and I'm standing and Slash is soloing right in front of me, and I'm standing playing, and it was one of the few moments in my life where I literally zoomed out and I saw me and Slash, and then Slash was soloing to me, you know, and I just remember going, this is fucking this is exhilarating, this is next level, and it doesn't matter what age I am, I'm always going to feel this way when these moments happen. I think if you don't feel that moment of magic, then fucking jack it in, you know. See if you're not standing next to Slash's curly hair and fucking top hat and getting sick.
Amazing. Yeah,
that's exactly right. I ran off stage during the Blackout's final song. We had a song called Higher and Higher, which had like a rap part in the middle. Uh-huh. And so I was doing that live, and then we were on Soundwave in Australia, and I looked to my left and Mike Patton was there. And I ran off stage before the rap. I ran up to him and I went, "Oh, oh yeah, I love you. Oh fuck, I told you I loved you. I gotta go. I'm in the band you're watching." Just ran.
That's awesome.
I didn't see him again on our tour, so I'm guessing he must have hid every time. Like, I can't see that idiot.
Was that Tomahawk tour or something, or Peeping Tom or something?
No.
Faith No More. It may have been Faith No More's reunion.
No, it wasn't Faith No More. No, it was. Who was he there with? Yeah, it might have been Tomahawk, I think. Okay. Yeah, it might have been Tomahawk.
You've got to take those moments, though, Sean. You do, because you know what? As you say, you didn't see him again. That's your one chance to just see, and it might not have gone exactly as you'd wanted.
Yeah.
Oh, no. You fucking matter to me. You know, like that's important. It's important. It's important to you to be able to share some, because that's the feeling. You just want to say thanks. Thanks for getting me, making me, and inspiring me to do this fucking stuff, you know?
Yeah, I also didn't want him to feel bad and then be like, oh, it's because of him. It's because of me that this shit is you. Because he's probably to blame for new metal, and he's got to hate that, surely.
He is. He's definitely. He doesn't like carrying that one. He's definitely. I think he's shot new metal through the head a few times.
He's had a bash. But
while we're kind of reminiscing about the early days, you brought her up a little bit earlier, but the first three Biffy Clyro records today kind of have that real cult vibe towards them. There seems to be a whole legion of fans who are so passionate about those records in particular. Is that quite a surprise for you that after all these years, with all the other records and different sounds and evolution you've had since then, that those records are still kind of connected with people on such a different level?
I think part of it's natural, Morgan, because they felt like little secrets. Those records felt are secret, and like no one knew our band at that point. So everyone that came to those shows or discovered those records were really plugged in, and to get into our band, especially even the way that we wrote songs back then, you know, songs were so complex that you had to work to get into those records. And I think once people got into them, there was no way to break free. I think also, I mean, I'm a bit like this with bands. When a band becomes more successful, I'm like, oh, fuck's sake, they were, you know, kind of better back then. So it's natural human nature. They've kind of remained untouched, those albums. I think they can be held in high regard with that. I think as soon as we went to a major label, maybe people have thought there's kind of different inspiration and stuff. But also with those three records, it was three albums in 3 years. It was such a moment. When I look back on that, it's almost like we were almost like a different type of band at that point. It was like we were really scrappy. We were really provocative. We wouldn't face the crowd in those tours. We'd face in. I wouldn't talk to the crowd. We made song. We put the choruses of the songs 4.5 minutes in because we wanted people to dig our band. We wanted you to have to work for it. And the people that persevered mean the world to me. And I absolutely don't have a problem with people loving those records and thinking the rest aren't as good, because to me, I can understand where that's coming from. I disagree because I think we're still getting fucking better. And I think if people worried less about genre, or maybe the fact that we're, you know, on the telly every now and again, then maybe they would get a level playing field. But there is a unique energy to those early records, and so it means a lot to me, because I know a lot of people maybe picked up guitar. I hope I'm not sounding like an arsehole, but I know that those records made it quite a lot of people pick up guitars and made them realize, you know what, see if you've got your buddies and a fucking couple of amplifiers, get in a fucking van and do it. And I know that there's been generations of that going on, But I think there was just a little reminder, because nu metal was so massive at that point, and there was like an element of kind of glam to it and showmanship, and that it was a little bit Hollywood. And I think the UK scene at that point was kind of a reaction to that. When you look at 100 Reasons, This Girl Hells for Heroes, you know, these bands, it was like almost the opposite of glam, and it was kind of like kind of not necessarily trying to aspire to something we weren't. And also, it was such a fertile time, you know, like, I mean, you know, Sean, you were part of that period as well. It's like, it's such a fertile time period, that kind of noughties for British rock music. And it was the last real kind of innocent time of rock music. You know, since then, everyone asks, oh, is rock music dead? Is rock music this or that? It's like, who gives a shit? You know, if you don't like it, then it's dead. If you do like it, it's not dead. Like, what the fuck do you want us to see? You know? but it was really, I was so excited, because it was all fucking garage rock as well in that era. And I just felt like anything interesting was happening away from that fucking indie rock vibe. And so yeah, a beautiful era, beautiful era. Sure, that was only 6 months ago or something like that.
No, but like, no, I totally agree with you. And anyway, as you said, I think the average kind of Biffy fan, some don't even realize that those records even exist. But am I right in saying that there were plans to do some kind of tour playing tracks from those records?
Yeah, I mean, because we know that for core people, that those albums are really important, and they're a big part of our identity too. I really want to do a 20-year kind of tour. I don't know whether we'll do like a Black and Sky year, a Vertigo or Infinity Land, or whether we do some, you know, like a big tour all together. We're working on like a photo book for the 20-year kind of anniversary as well. And unfortunately, the fucking lockdowns probably put the kibosh on it for the time being, because now we're not starting touring this fucking record till next year. But it's something I definitely would love to, you know, to celebrate and mark in some way. I'm not necessarily a fan of, like, sorry, guys. That's my missus. What have I done wrong?
What have I said? This isn't live. What's your
age? It's something I definitely love to mark. I'm not a massive fan of like over idolizing your own records and taking an album out on tour for 3 years, you know, because it mattered fucking 15 years ago. But I would love to share it. Realistically, when we play live now, if we play for 2 hours, we still barely struggle to fit in songs from those records. I see the value. I love those songs. We did a show a couple of years ago for War Child where we supported ourselves and we played only songs from the first three records as a support band, and then went on. And that was what got me thinking, because I felt like I was inhabiting a slightly different part of my brain. The muscle memory for those songs has shifted. So the thought of going out and playing them all again, it would feel like brand new band and brand new songs. So it's something we'll definitely do, Morgan. Nice. As soon as we get the lay of the land, we'll definitely try and achieve that.
Awesome. But saying that as well, I think you're one of the bands that can never win when you're trying to write your own set list, because there's so many albums, there's so many fan favourites. Someone's going to be annoyed somewhere that there's not more tracks from Puzzles or Only Revolutions or something. I mean, that must be quite frustrating at times.
It's really hard, man. It's hard. You know, I always want to play the new, every band or act wants to play their newer songs because they've not played them 1,000 times. You know, I don't want to become Springsteen yet. I don't want to play for fucking 3 or 4 hours. I don't think we've quite earned that yet, but there's always songs that we miss out. And but what I love most about putting the set together is maybe being able to put like a song like Rearrange or Space next to like a song like we'll quite often play There's No Such Thing as a Jaggy Snake or like Wave Upon Wave Upon Wave. And I love taking these songs from their records and kind of shaking people who maybe come for the bigger songs. It's like I want to entice them over to the dark side. That's what Guns N' Roses did, Nirvana did for me. It wasn't like, they aren't the most extreme bands in the world, but they, you know, it's that way it pulls you over. You're like, oh wait, I wonder what that's influenced by. So people that maybe are only drawn to the singles, I love the thought that they get roughed up a bit, not physically.
I don't know, some of those mosh pits or some of those songs can be brutal.
If you ended up in there by accident. But I love that thought of like, a kid coming to a show, you know, and because they maybe like a song like Instant History, and then they hear a song like that Golden Rule and they go, what is this? I've never heard heavy music and music like this. I've been listening to fucking Spotify for 6 years and all I'm hearing is you know, which has a place, but it's sometimes harder to get exposed. So I love exposing people to different types of music. But yeah, it's a tough thing to do, man.
I can imagine. I can
imagine. Lars Ulrich, he seems to love it. Lars seems to fucking love doing it.
But while we're talking about records in particular as well, your latest, the Celebration of Endings, hit another UK number one in the charts. I think you're third in a row for full releases. I mean, how do you see this album differently than any of your others in the past?
I think, again, I'm going to sound like a cliche here, Morgan, but I think this is the best record we've ever fucking made. You know, some like when we made Ellipsis, that was the first record that I actively, when I was writing it, I was actively trying to do something different than Biffy. You know, when I was writing those songs, I didn't want them to become songs that we would play in the practice room lots and lots. So I kind of kept that live energy away from them. So Ellipsis became a specific kind of project. We then went to work on a movie soundtrack called Balance, Not Symmetry, and see kind of getting back in and remembering what that feeling is when you've got eye contact, when you're working on an idea, and when you're playing together and there's volume rather than just like a laptop or a piano or something. And it made me totally remember my love for volume and for shouting. I know that sounds a bit lame to say that, but honestly, I kind of remembered this is such an important part of our band. You know, I feel like this is the first record that's fully encapsulated kind of all we do. You know, it has scary moments for people like the pop stuff. It's got scary moments for people that like the heavy stuff. You know, yeah. And that's, I think, why I think this is our best. You know, hopefully once we make the next one, I'll be like, this is our best album.
Yeah. There's not many bands who go, oh, well, this latest album's our worst album, but check it out anyway. Check it out anyway.
No. But I completely get what you mean, because like when I listened to it for the first time, the intro for just North of No Self in particular had like so many different elements of Biffy Clyro over the years. I thought, you know, starting with that kind of weird clean guitar riff, then hell of a distortion over on the top, and just the drums, I mean everything. So for me, it has a bit of what everyone's come to love from Biffy Clyro, but a couple of different inspirations for songwriting.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much. But yeah, I think I'm a lot more sure who maybe I am as a songwriter and as a person. Maybe, you know, not just make it sound like a therapy session, but you know, like I definitely feel more secure in what we're good at as a band, what I'm good at as a songwriter. It doesn't mean that we'll still won't try weird shit and still try different things, but I think I've kind of come to terms with the identity of our band. You know, I know that sounds silly, but you're always searching for new things. There's some songs we've tried over the years, like we've gone wild in one direction that maybe you think, oh, that's close, but maybe that doesn't suit us or this, you know. But it's just all about committing in the moment and being, and as I said earlier, about that honesty of doing it. I'm not apologetic anymore about our band, you know, like you know, I think maybe when you grow up in hard rock and metal and that, you feel like mainstream kind of, I've always kind of sneered at you a little, like, oh, it's noise and abrasive. And actually now I'm like, I love that. I've loved that for years. And it's really, I now take pride in the fact that people that don't understand what we do will never get it, because to them it's either just a racket or whatever. And I love that. But I really appreciate you saying that, because we took a little bit longer in this album because, you know, I really wanted to have the patience to feel that we were saying something musically and lyrically that we kind of hadn't said before. As much as the album's like a kind of celebration of all we do, there still has to be those new moments and those things that make you go, oh, where's this going to take us? Because if everything feels familiar, then you're not investigating and you're not on an adventure. So I'm never interested in that. But sometimes those songs can help navigate the rest of it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And just a couple more quick things, Si, before we let you go. We know you've got a really busy schedule, but speaking of all the different kind of influences and reaching different kind of audience and stuff, I wanted to ask you about one of the features you did with Good Charlotte a few years ago on their track Reason to Stay. How did that come about?
Well, I was I'd spent a little bit of time in LA a few years ago. I was just wanting to write a bunch of songs, and this was before Ellipsis, so this is kind of in relation to what I was saying. I didn't feel as inspired standing in the practice room as I maybe had previously. So I went out to LA. I just wanted to work in a bunch of studios, and I worked with John Feldman, who's a wonderful producer. Now, I just woke up to a text one day, and John was like, Joel and Benji are in town today. Do you want to write a song with them? I was like, fuck it. So we went in, and we wrote about three songs in a day. They're really nice gents. I didn't intend to be a part of that session. They were so welcoming. They're really open with their creativity, which I really appreciate. So we just sat down, like John played a guitar chord, I started singing, then Joel started singing the chorus, and he just went straight in and sang it, and it became this song on the record. So it was one of the most innocent and best ways that you could make music. You know, no, we weren't formulating a plan. It was like, nice to meet you, man, what a pleasure, have a coffee, have a smoke and all that, and then like, hey, do you want to, should we just try something? And that... Again, that liberation of not worrying about writing songs for Biffy. You know, at that point, I felt like every time I was picking up a guitar, I was like, what kind of song is this? Where's this going? Is this as good as what I've done? And I needed to kind of do that, the dirt off the shoulder. And that's kind of what we did. But what a pleasure. And such sweet boys. I love the fact that they're still doing what they're doing. They've really helped cultivate, like, I think they've got a management company and things, and they're cultivating a few younger artists, and I tell you what, they'll look after whoever they work with. So it was a pleasure. But yeah, it was as strange to me as it seemed. I almost ended up playing I got asked to play a guitar solo in Robbie Williams' album at that point, actually. Looking back, I'm like, why the fuck didn't I do that? I'm like, why didn't I do it? But I didn't do it. You know, I remember that at that time when I'd said no to that, I was like, you know what? Opportunities don't keep coming around. And, as you know, and what's the point in feeling like a fucking snob about anything? It's like, see, what's music about? It's about joy. It's about sharing. It's about communication. It's about having fucking fun. So from that moment on, I always remember thinking, you know, see if I get a left field, you know, kind of invite or something. I'll try it, because you never know what's going to be around the corner. But I love those boys. They're so sweet.
Yeah. Well, I think this is our 100th episode of this podcast. This is our big one. Yeah.
Happy birthday, gents. Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
You don't look a day over 56.
Last week's episode was John Feldman. Would have been
honestly.
Would have been John Feldman. Yeah.
Fucking brilliant. I tell you what, he's a wonderful guy. Again, in that, I spent a little bit of time with John in that trip. And I tell you what, we wrote about seven songs in 3 days. I've never worked with someone that can work as fast as I need them to work. And John was the first person that he was like, I would come through like having sung and written a guitar. He'd be like, right, that's done, what have you got? And I'd be like, pick up guitar.
Play. Too fast, too fast, John.
Honestly, it was like, but it was really, you know, he's got such a wonderful energy, and I'm sure you felt that from talking to him. He really has this fucking, you know, like kind of Californian West Coast, like, let's fucking do it, you know. I love my life.
that's exactly. I think he might have even have said that exact sentence.
He did say it a few times.
I don't want to give it away, but he's told me that's his key to getting up and being productive every day. He wakes up in the morning, he goes straight outside, and he goes, I love my fucking life. And then he goes in and has his coffee. And I thought, why the fuck not?
Yeah. Awesome. And just fantastic. One more quick one for me. I'm sorry if this is a strange one. It's just something I've always wondered. Now,
where's he going now?
Biffy have a reputation of playing shows most of the time without a shirt. So... was something that's always just wondered.
He's not taking it off now, Mo. No, he's not taking it off now.
when you're playing like random festivals in like Poland, for example, where it gets a little bit cold, have you regretted that decision, or is there a plan for when the weather's not the best? Or you committed too much to? I mean. I'm sorry, it's just always something I've wanted to ask.
Right. So. You definitely don't know us very well if you think there's a plan. What I would say is there's been like three gigs in my life where I've thought, are you fucking joking? Like one was in Hog, I think maybe two were in Hogmanay in Scotland at New Year. One time we went on stage and it was -3 degrees when we started. And I remember thinking, and so when we came off for the bells, like we had to get wrapped in tinfoil. And that's when I started going, this is bonkers. This isn't quite rock and roll. And then the other time we played a show in the Arctic Circle up in Norway it wasn't Caius.
Surely not. Surely not. You weren't topless in the Arctic.
We fucking were, man. Circle. I swear to God, one in the morning. It was still daylight because it never got dark up there in the summer. So there was smoked fish hanging on one side. There was people wrapped up like proper fucking scarves and everything. We were on there. We got like total snaps from John Garcia, who's the old Caius frontman, because he's from California. So he was fucking wrapped, and he's looking at these three Scottish guys standing with nipples set to fucking stun. But yes, we did that. Arctic Circle, that's the one. You know what, if we could do that, we could do anything.
Yeah. Have you ever had any complaints from people because you haven't derobed? Has there been a point where you haven't derobed?
Yeah, there's a couple of times on tour I'll just decide I want to wear a fucking jacket or something. People are like, oh, fuck's sake. And I'm like, is that what it's come to? Is it just a pint of flesh?
Yeah. What am I, a piece of meat?
I'm just a stripper. Piece of meat.
Awesome.
But I tell you what, just to say, like, there's something about going on stage with your shirt off in these weird situations that it gives you a level of fearlessness, because you already feel a bit ridiculous. You already feel that you're kind of overstepped the mark. And it always means that we have this mentality. You know, the act of taking our shirts off before we go on backstage is quite an empowering thing. You know, not to sound, again, like a fucking hippie or take myself too seriously, but it's quite an empowering feeling of going, we're fucking ready to go to battle. And again, that's maybe sounds slightly old-fashioned, but that's still the mentality we have. It's like, let's fucking take some fucking names tonight, you know. And we do. Always the wrong names, and then a tattoo on me.
Oh, well, nice. Absolutely fantastic. This is being such a great way to celebrate our 100th episode. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you so happy much. Happy birthday, gents. Thanks for having me on the 100th. I appreciate it a lot. It means a lot to me.
No, thank you, seriously.
Yeah, please, if we're ever allowed out again, let's please do one in the flesh. That would be fantastic.
We'll hopefully be out touring some point next year. We've got a few shows before summer, but I think we're coming to you guys' neck of the woods maybe after summer, so please come down. We'd love to see you both anyway, and even as guests, even if you don't want to do your cheers. Work, you don't want to talk to this loser anymore.
We'd love that, so yeah, thank you so much, and good luck with the new album.
Yes.
Celebration of Endings is out now. Everybody go check it out because it's fan bloody tastic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cheers. Thank you, Simon.
Thanks, man. Thank you.
Listen, what a pleasure, the gents. Honestly, it's an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
You're listening to Simon Podcast.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. My God. I am fully in love with that man.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just going to come out and say it right now. Simon, if you're listening, it was a pleasure finally getting to meet you and speak to you. I'm glad none of the restraining orders came to effect in this podcast. And I will take that invite for us to record one of them in the flesh with you ASAP Rocky. So as soon as gigs can happen, I'll be backstage with a microphone.
That is worrying on all levels. Thank you again to the wonderful Simon Neil of Biffy Clyro. If you get a chance, check out, well, everything they've been doing over lockdown as well, from his little sessions from in his house where he's wearing jazzy, absolutely different jazzy ensembles, everyone, and then to the lockdown stream they did as a full band was Increíble, which I believe is Spanish for very, very good.
But literally, if you're for some reason living under a rock and not aware of their back catalogue, go and check out all of their albums. There's something for literally everyone. So one of my favourite records of all time is probably Puzzles, just because of like all the different kind of sounds on that record. But yeah, check it out. A Celebrations of Endings is the new one and is available right now everywhere, so pick up a copy. And he's just a lovely human. Like, that conversation was so wholesome. It was nice to finally get to ask him so many questions that we've kind of wondered about the banding himself over the years. And yeah, I had a fantastic time. So thank you again, Simon. Hopefully see you at Downloads Festival 2021 in the pit.
Yes, it was very, 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 very nice of him. And yes, he remembered me, which was weird because I didn't expect anybody to remember me. So, yeah, thanks again, Simon. You're an absolute superstar. Biffy Clyro, killing it right now. And yeah, looking forward to download next year.
Well, speaking of him working on different material and stuff as well, of course, we said about his feature on a Good Charlotte track. There's been an announcement that he's going to be featuring on a completely other band's album next year as well.
Other band, other genre.
That words escape me because how good this interview was. But Simon Neil will be featuring on the track Goliath by Architects on their new album, For Those That Wish to Exist. That's going to be released on February the 26th. So I'm going to say it right now. Obviously, Sam Carter is listening to this because he loves Biffy Clyro. Come on the podcast then and tell us about how that happened.
I don't think he is listening to this.
Oh, he's a Manchester United fan as well. I support Man United, so there's loads in common. So sort her out. But anyway.
Cool. You both enjoy millionaire children running around in shorts. Class. Anyway, congratulations to Architects, who brought out the song Animal, which is a fucking ripper. Little bit sad because Raiders are bringing out a song in a couple of months. It's called Animal, and theirs is called Animals. I know plural, but yeah. But what a song. What a song. Well done to Architects again. And congratulations to Holding Absence as well. Our friends Holding Absence with their song Beyond Belief, which is out now as well. Yes. Sees the boys in colour for the first time.
I can't believe it. I was shooketh to the core that Holding Absence are not in black and white.
Well, yeah.
You know, who would have thought?
It was strange. Well, when we did the podcast with him, he was black and white. So that's mad, isn't it? So yeah, if you like Holding Absence, go back and check out our early podcast with Lucas. It was very, very informative. But yes, well done to Architects, well done to Holding Absence, and bring me the Rise Never song out as well, called Teardrops, which we haven't heard yet because we're recording it slightly before it comes out. So I'm guessing it's probably very, very good.
Well,
so
if we're speaking about kind of new music and news, Sean, tell us about your band Raiders. What's going on?
Yeah. We got two songs out so far. We put out this year one called Destructobot, which I love, and I Still Function, which I love as well, because they're both my songs, aren't they? So I should love them both. Raiders UK on all the streaming sites. Go to raidersbanduk.bandcamp.com if you want to buy anything. We got t-shirts for sale, and we have a new song coming out the first week of November called Unnecessary V's, where all of the vowels are V's. So it's a bastard to spell. You're never going to find it if you want to search for it.
That's Raiders Band UK on Twitter, Instagram, and Le Facebook. If you want to follow more accounts on social media platforms, check out at Sapnin Pod on Twitter and Instagram, at Sapnin Pod, spelt like this.
At SAPPENINPOD. That's at SAPPENINPOD.
But listen, thank you again to every single one of you for giving us any support, moments of your time, plays, likes, shares, subscribing-ness, whatever you call it.
Subscribing-ness.
Over the last 100 episodes. Honest to God, it means the world to us, and we wouldn't be able to get this far without you. So if you are a new listener, please sure to do all those things I just said. And especially, we send all our love to every single person who's become a member of our Patreon over almost 2 years as well. It's patreon.com/sapning. We love every single person in this wonderful community we've been able to make. So if you want to meet some new best friends, come and join us.
Please do. Please do. Yes. As Morgan says, thanks to all those people. Thanks to all the PRs. Thanks to all the managers of bands. Thanks to all of our friends and family who have shared anything we've done. We really, really appreciate it. The shares really, really help. And yeah, just we appreciate it so, so much.
In that case, if you'd like to show us a little bit more support as well, please share this episode and the podcast in all your Instagram stories, retweet it and stuff, especially this one to celebrate episode 100. Let all your friends know that we've somehow managed to make it triple digits. They'll be completely blown away that the two of us have actually been able to fathom sentences up until this point, and check it out. So I think it's a good technique, Sean.
Yeah, I wasn't sure where you were going with fathom these sentences, but I just a massive thank you to everybody. Like, I don't want to get emotional, but We genuinely never thought we'd probably do more than 5 or 10 of these. And now we've done 100 weeks in a row with some absolutely amazing guests, with some of the most interesting stories I've ever heard in my life. And the only reason to start this podcast was to hear bands and people I've been lucky enough to meet, just to hear their stories. So we've heard some brilliant ones. So thank you very much. Well, thank you very much to all the guests. We haven't thanked the guests. Yeah. Like, thank you very much, like, for being open with us, for being cool. Everybody's been awesome. We did have that little wobble with Real Big Fish being in a mood, but that's fine.
But, genuinely,
thank you to everybody. Yeah, thank you.
It's been great. And just to think as well, like, it's 100 episodes without fail, week after week, I'm just quite proud of that. We've been able to reach that milestone and not had a week off or anything. Like, both of us, Sean, have gone through things over those 100 weeks, and we haven't let it affect this at all. So I'd just like to say well done to you, well done to myself. I'm proud. Yeah. I'm proud of each other. Good. And our second year anniversary is next month, episode 104, so we've got to outdo ourselves even more. So the pressure's on. But I reckon you know, we're going to cook up something impressive. But
I hope so. I hope so. Do you know what it feels like to me? Our second birthday to me feels like Wayne's World 2. Right? Right? Who's going to be there? Who's going to be there, Morg? Van Halen? Van Halen's going to be there?
What?
Oh no, that was the absolute worst example. I was just thinking of quotes from Wayne's World 2. No, oh, this has gone wrong. I thought our second birthday, like, we've aimed so high and we've shot so many fucking darts at people, and some people we haven't heard back from, and we're just like, yeah, they could be happening. But Wayne's World 2, our second birthday, we're trying to book them, so hopefully they'll come.
Aerosmith are going to be there?
An old man faction in a kayak out of a log? What? Nothing.
Right, so before we wrap this up, it's come to this point of the episode. Now, if you're a regular listener, you know we give a massive shout out to not only all the patrons, but other elite members. They sign up, they give us a name that they edit every week just to mess with Sean and stuff, and we read them out. Sometimes it's comedy gold and we have a good laugh. I announced on last week's episode, episode 99 with John Feldman, that I would read them out for the 100th episode celebration. I'm very worried about this now. I think it's going to come and bite me on the ass.
Yeah, I'm hoping you get cancelled.
Whoa, please don't.
I know we've just done all our loving bit where we've thanked each other and all that, but this could be very, very fun. So, Morgan. Well, yeah, check out the description of this episode or however you are listening to this episode, because Morgan writes out all the names in that, and takes him a while. So, please check that out. Thank you very much to everybody. We're trying to tell you what, we'll end the show now and then we'll do the names, because the names are going to take you forever, I think. Thank you very much if you've got this far. Thank you very much if you've listened to the podcast. Please share, rate and subscribe where you can. Please, if you're going to sleep, put it on silent. Give it a couple of plays, for God's sake.
Download multiple podcast platforms and listen to us on all of them. So listen to us once properly and then listen to us in your sleep on a different one, because that helps a little bit more as well.
If you've got one of those streaming farms in China or Russia that gets artists loads and millions and thousands of plays, please think about getting Sampling Podcast on there. Right, this is it now. Thank you very much to everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, over to Morgan Richards for the elite members of the Sapnin Podcast Patreon.
Patreon.com/Sapnin, you bastards. So.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A massive thank you to the wonderful Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi yes. Luaway, Mitch Perry, yes. Samantha yes. Spray.
Yes.
Pi?
Yes.
Pi.
From now on, Sarah James will now be known as Pi. Carry on.
I'm not reading 3.14159266 5. No.
Oh.
A very, very, very special thank you to Emma Barber, Janelle Hepaticolongs to Gigs to no. my Caston. Amadine, congrats on the 100th episode. To celebrate, I changed my name for the first time. I love you guys, Urbano. That's brilliant. Yes. Thank you very nice. Much for that.
More
you,
like how we need, don't we?
More like that. Kelly. To
Tyro Paras.
I can do it, Sean. Let me come out with whatever I come out with. Kelly Tyro.
No, I think it's Thy. Thyro Paras.
Thyro Party in your pants to Mosized Young. I'm just making these up.
Sodomized Young, yeah. That's, yeah. Tell you what, Mo, just guess, right? Have a look at it. Like catchphrase, have a look at the words and just
say what you fucking
start again. No, you don't need to start again. Carry on from where we are.
Dilly, I hip to flow ride cycle to Grimwood. Nathan Crawshaw, Super Hall, whatever Paul Herschel has wrote. Drew makes me feel like a natural woman style.
Go back. Super phallus, flagellistic, XP cunny, I'm guessing it's Dorshus. The problem is now, I think it's cut off the names because it's so long. Bugger.
Liam Connolly. I regret this decision. Berserk Kron Stange Graft Meester. Michael Engler. Ohio is for emo Chester.
I like it's just every people who haven't done it. I'm Michael Engler. Yes.
Tom Heppert Cho Lang is Stone Grams to my Owen. Amy Flo Champion. Johnny Phillips.
No, wait. Philippication. Californication. Flow Californification. Now, and it's like the Red Hot Chili Pepper song. Carry on, but Johnny Phillips.
Yes. Thank you, Johnny Phillips. Thank you to Kate. Wonderpus Photo Genesis Puttock. I don't know what that means though. Tankfly Boss Walk Jam Nitty Gritty. You're listening to Mo Dick from the Big Bang City. This is Jam Hot. Simon Amos. Yep. Jody, the harder the better, Shannon.
I see what she's done. I said, come up with a name, the harder the better. Nice. Literal. I like it. Well done, Jody.
Ollie, every single member of the Patreon is
crit.
What?
Pulcritted dinners? It sounds like a place around, yeah, but I'm not, I don't think it is.
Ollie, every single member of the Patreon is Pulcritidinus Amesbury. Kate Stevenson. Samuel Thyroid Cream Griffiths, Jenny Sexy Boy Munster, Dana Lasnova, Lucy Deards, Martina McManus, Emily Senegals, Kevin Clark, Erin Howard, John and Emma, Becky Handy, Kelly, Perfectly Splendid, Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, Mallory, Lewis Cook, Nuna Clark, Jason, Sven
Palatine.
Senator Palatine was at fault for Jar Jar Binks' death. Heredia, Mike Cunningham, Marcy Jacobson, Craig Flibbertigget Harris, Sandra Kowacek, James McNaught, Libby Cropper, Flo.
We've had this one before. We've had this one. Oh, do you know what? For a second then, I stopped thinking we are recording a podcast and I just listened to what was coming out of your mouth, right? And it's a fucking mess. It sounds like someone's tipping alphabet soup and reading it at the same time. Carry on, bud.
Flow Californication. Nice one, Charles. Kelly M. McCannon, Tallulah Grant, Tommy Michael, Sharif Oladali, Stuart, Hippopotamus, Turusus, McNaught, Jenny Robinson, Lydia Henderson, Keris Khanvayak, I messed that up, Andrews.
I can't believe we don't know why.
But no means least, a very special thank you to Becky.
You've got to get this one. Newmore I can't even see the full name.
Pneumolotrachycrosscuppy.
Well, that's microscopic in the middle, isn't it? Silicol volcano.
It doesn't help that everything's in lowercase, so I can't like spread it. Becky. Oh, I don't even know how to pronounce her last name. Malioko.
No, how do you not know?
Betty Mayoko.
She's. Oh. Got in the end, kind of.
That's patreon.com/sapnin. Thank you to single person who has gotten this far, and for every one of you bastards for signing up. You've made this go on for way too long. We've done it, Sean. This is episode 100. We got there. Very special thanks again to Simon Neil for not only being a beautiful bastard, but for taking time out of his time for coming on. And we will see you next week right here on Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin! Lovely. Fucking 100 of them, like, mad.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.